introduce tonight's speaker, Peter M. from Florida. I'm going to unmute you now, and Peter, you can begin whenever you're ready. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And thank you, Paul, for asking me and the group for having me to be a part of this pretty neat deal you have set up. So I appreciate the opportunity to share the good news, and great to see so many familiar faces. And before we get going, I was listening to some of the conversations going back and forth where we were basically competing for who had the most drunks in their area code. And only in AA would we do that. I mean, most people don't even want to talk about the underbelly, and we're so grateful to, hey, I have more drunks, I have more heroin addicts in my neighborhood, and we get like a chip for that in AA. In fact, I've learned AA is the only place I'm aware of on the planet where I can tell you about the most terrible, nasty, disgusting things I've done, and you say, here's my number, give me a call, only in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm right at home. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. I'm very grateful to be a recovered member of a sacred fellowship and a member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always refer to AA as a sacred place because it is, where I've gotten to see, and many others have gotten to see, lives get reborn and resurrected right in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for fun and for free. And my prayer would be for you, if you haven't experienced the sacredness of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you were to stick around long enough and get to experience what I've gotten to see with my own eyes and I've gotten to hear with my own ears, the power of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, and why I'm so convinced of God, of all the things I've gotten to see and all the little ingredients, is that it's for free. It's a fun and for free. It doesn't cost a dime to be here, and when, because you can't buy the soul. The soul is never for sale. And what we do is we tend to the soul in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's lots of pieces that go into place to make that happen. But the soul belongs to God, and we offer that back to him. And what he does is fix it and give it back to us. And off we go and bring another one in a day at a time. And so I'm so grateful to be in the middle of all of that. You know, for years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would tell folks in AA, whether I was behind the podium or sharing from the floor, and I always meant this sincerely, not in a boastful way. I thought it was my truth, but the truth is true until we find out a new truth. And that was how hard I worked for Alcoholics Anonymous, how hard I've worked on my program, how hard I've been working with the fourth step and all the work I've been doing, buckling down and really doing this stuff. And then I had this aha moment one time after a meditation, this realization where it got crystal clear that not only I haven't done anything for my recovery, but I don't even have the power on my own to do anything for my recovery. But it's been given to me from you. And God gave you information to pass on to me, who is a next sick and suffering alcoholic. And all the chopping wood and carrying water that I've done over the years doesn't come from me, but comes from God. It kind of gets passed through me and out to others. The endurance, the courage, the strength, the direction, the willingness to go to any extreme to continue to do this work and to practice fidelity to my God doesn't come from me. I'm alcoholic. I'm always looking, this mind is always looking for an easier, softer way, looking for a quick way out, looking for the quick fix, looking for instant gratification. I'm an alcoholic. I meditate one time. I want to part the seas and levitate. You know, I want it like that. And God allows me to hang in there. And God has allowed me to work with many alcoholics and many 12-step calls, and the ugly 12-step calls where you have to throw somebody in the shower and hose them down and put them in the car and take them to a meeting, give them a couple of pops before the meeting and a couple of pops after the meeting to keep them from going into seizures. And who else is going to do that? Anyone else that I know who's willing to do that would get paid for it. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do it for fun and for free. And for this, I'm forever grateful. June 23rd, 1988, when God separated me from alcohol. And we're in June right now, and I was just sharing at one of these Zoom meetings a couple of nights ago this time of the year in 1988, I was in serious, serious trouble. Alcoholism had me in its grip, and what I've learned, in order for my alcoholism to get a life, it has to take mine, and it was winning. And in 1988, for about 6 months thereabout, I was living in the back of an abandoned building in lower Manhattan, in an area called Alphabet City, which back in the day was a really, really sordid spot. I understand now you need like lots of money to buy real estate down there, but at the time it was just nasty. And I took up residency in the back of an abandoned building because that's all I could do. That's all I was capable of doing. And that's all how I was capable of living at the time. And I would go out into the street and panhandle and doing a lot of other things, you know, to get money, to get whiskey, because I was experiencing withdrawal regularly. I didn't even know I was going through withdrawal, but I was. And I was in some serious trouble. I was addicted to pills as well. And so when I didn't get the alcohol and pills in me, and the pills I was taking was alcohol in a pill form anyway, I was in trouble. And at the time, oh Lord, I weighed about 130 pounds. That's about 60 pounds less than I weigh now. And I was running around with hepatitis C, and I had a bout with narcotics. So I had some ugly marks on my arm that were infected. I was urinating blood and my clothes were filthy. And I looked like a bum you would see on the street. And I don't say that to embellish, and I don't embellish when I say that or for shock value. It's just where my alcoholism takes me to. Yeah. And what happened to me is I got to experience what the big book talks about on page 43. And that is this line, 100% hopeless apart from divine help. And I've come to experience that until I reach that place of 100% hopeless apart from divine help, that means I think I have hope in something else. And for me, is hope in another drink, another bottle of whiskey was going to take me past where I was to a place of utopia. Everything's going to be warm and fuzzy on this next drink, even though I really needed to drink, because if I didn't, I would get violently ill. But this bottle, this is going to do it. This concoction of pills and whiskey is going to take me there, and everything's going to be okay. So much so that there was a time on this horrific journey into hell that I tried to actually take my life by eating a bunch of pills because there was hope in the idea of dying. And what showed up to me in June of 88 was I can't, I had a body that wouldn't die and a mind that stopped working. I can't die. I can't get sober. I can't get drunk anymore. I'm living to maintain being sick, and I'm going to be stuck in this place forever. I'm never going anywhere past this. And that was very sobering. And that was the last rung before God snapped me to attention, where God interrupted my death on June 23rd, 1980. And what God did was split me, if you will, wide open, as he has done for many of us, and I'm one of them, year after year after year. Because only when I'm broken open does the ego go silent and desperation screams louder than the ego, and God's light can shine through. And alcoholism doesn't get to take my life, not when God is present like that. And my job today is to chop wood and carry water, to grow in understanding and effectiveness, to serve this God, to stand in that light, because I only could do as good as the light I'm standing in. I can only do as good as the light I'm standing in. It's not by what I've learned. I have lots of information like many of us this meeting tonight, but the journey is seeking transformation, not just information, because information, self-knowledge, I get drunk while I'm drinking. I mean, I get drunk with a whole bunch of knowledge in my head, and I got a beer full of whiskey. A belly full of whiskey and a head full of knowledge, you know. I'm not doing too good. So in June of 88, I didn't see this coming, this thing called recovery. I didn't see Alcoholics Anonymous coming. In fact, I hated Alcoholics Anonymous and I hated my religious community. I thought they were both cults. When I was in treatment, the H&I folks would bring meetings in and I would swear they were loaded on something. They were getting paid for it. And then sometimes they would talk to me about how they were going to go bowling after the meeting, or they were going to go to a diner after the meeting. and they had jobs that they reported to 5 days a week. And I said to myself, how lame can lame be? Yet they were going home at the end of the meeting and they were taking attendance on me in the treatment center. And I was not going home. And the truth is true until we find out a new truth. And in June 23rd, 1988, God split me open and gave me my first encounter with him, with that power. And it was a G-O-D, the gift of desperation. And I must tell you, that God moment didn't feel godly at all. I didn't think it was God. It didn't feel like God. It didn't sound like God. It didn't look like God. But it was very much God, and I was in that place of 100% hopeless from divine help. And my experience has shown me, and by listening to many stories, that that's when the spiritual transformation actually ignites. We will go through the 12 steps with the sponsor who's been through the 12 steps from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And then it reads, having had a spiritual awakening as these result of the 12 steps. So it's almost promising that we're going to be transformed as the result of the work in the big book. But when does the light get turned on? When does the switch get turned on? When do we actually catch some power? For me, it was in the very worst moment of my life next to my mom's suicide. That was it. June 23rd, 1988, where if I don't drink, I'm going to die. And if I get a drink, I'm going to die. Oh, my God. What do I do? God, please help me. The very same God I mocked at, spat at, and despised for so long. Thank God God is not a human power because he would have wrote me off. But what happens along the way, we start to return to insane thinking and insane behavior, thinking we have it under control, that I can suddenly somehow manage my life because maybe I have double-digit sobriety, that God will take care of my booze problem, but through all the other stuff I can manage, and insanity starts to creep back. In the same way I went forwards through the steps, I start to go backwards through the steps, and then I step on a landmine and blow up. It's called alcoholism, active alcoholism. Because my alcoholism doesn't come in a whiskey bottle. My alcoholism resides right up in here. And at any given moment, when I rest on my laurels, this thing gets ignited to take over and I start to live in the head again. And that's not good for anyone, especially me. Over and over and over again over the years, every once in a while, I would think I have a really good plan. And then I always find out God is always beyond my cleverest plans, that I need to continue to pray. I need to go through the steps at least once a year. So this prayer, this God can bring death to any identity that I come up with for me. Yeah? Start to walk into Alcoholics Anonymous with all these identities that I think I have, or the roles I play that I think you want me to play. It's all living up in the head. And something happens in steps 4 through 9, which the following speakers will talk about, where all of that comes down and gets grinded into dust. And what's left, as uncomfortable as it may be at the beginning, is what God wanted all along. And that's where we get true liberation. When I start to play the role God has assigned me, but I can't even hear that until I'm rid of me. Until I experience the death of self for successful living. And I can't do that. If I had a PhD, I couldn't do that. If I went to 20 meetings a week, I couldn't do that. If I studied the big book and recited every line to you, I still couldn't do that. That comes from God. And what I have found the 12 step do is break down self, awaken the spirit, and my prayer positions me for God to do what God's going to do. I just need to be willing to be changed. I can't command God to do anything. The steps don't keep me sober. My sponsor, my home group, the meetings don't keep me sober. But they take me to this power which has been keeping me sober all along. It's like when I say, but for the grace of God, I got the grace of God. God gave me some grace. That's wonderful, but that doesn't equate to being spiritually fit or having conscious contact with God. I'm just getting a gift that God gives one of his kids, like a mama feeding her baby. She just does it. So I get to have an experience with this power. And so I learned what I was up against out there, and I really learned what I was up against when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Exactly what my illness looks like, or this disease, whatever you choose to call it. I don't really get interested in that. What this alcoholism thing looks like. that once I'm separated from alcohol, I still have active alcoholism. It's called thinking. It's has my thought life manifested into my life? Because that's never a good thing. Am I still seeing the world through the mind, still hearing the world through the mind, still speaking to the world through the mind, still being from the mind? Or am I led by the soul? My experience has proven the soul always knows where to go, what to do, what to say, how to be. And what's so unbelievable, the baffling feature of alcoholism, I'll be sober for a little while, and the relationship gets good, and the money is starting to be earning. The job is good. I'm employable. The health is good. Everything's looking good. I'm going, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. And somewhere in there, I think I can take over and start to manage. And then the whole thing falls apart. And then I begin to blame people instead of taking my own inventory. Part of free will for me is a conscious decision to either trust God or trust myself. I'm in that fork in the road. Am I going to trust God in this? Or am I going to go back to doing what I always did and always get what I always got? So I open up a big book with a sponsor and we begin the journey. And I find out that there's 43 pages plus doctor's opinion that talk about what I'm up against, my alcoholism. The rest of the steps are kind of broken up. Yeah. Into chapters 6 and 7 is a paragraph each. Step one, 43 pages. Plus doctor's opinion to send home to me, not to acquire information, but to get into the soul where I get changed exactly what I'm up against, that I have an illness that wants me dead will settle for me drunk. It's chronic, it's progressive, it's fatal, and it has no mercy. And it'll come in other forms because my alcoholism, especially in my first 6 months in AA, will go underground and resurface in other areas. They're called food sprees. They're called gambling sprees. They're called money sprees. They're called sex sprees. They're called fear sprees. And it goes on and on and on because the present moment is too painful. I lost my GPS. Life is hurting again. It's really problematic again. I need to seek relief and I'll only do it once. And that becomes obsessive compulsive. And somewhere in it is a drink. And I didn't even see it happening. It's called the reemergence of the ego. Tebow talks about this. And I don't even know my ego's doing the thinking for me. He's leading me around like a dog on a leash. And I'm telling members in AA how when they ask me how I'm doing, I tell you I'm doing fine. Everything's great. My first 6 months in AA was completely Looney Tunes. I was making a lot of meetings. I was seeking counsel from the elders, but I didn't make that commitment to a sponsor yet. Food sprees, developed an eating disorder, sex sprees. Money sprees, any money I had to spend it to get some relief. And I didn't have a lot. I had nothing. My dad would send me some money to Minnesota. If it was $50, I blew through it in 20 minutes. I just had to go do something. I could not be. And I bottomed out after 6 months, almost 6 months to the day. Thank God I didn't drink, but I hit a sober bottom. And that's just as painful as a drunken bottom. And I have nothing to pour onto it. And so it all set me up for when I came home from Minnesota, where I was living out there for a while with treatment and sober living, etc. I found a teacher in Alcoholics Anonymous, a sponsor, and began to take me through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stopped to see what I was up against. You know, that second half of the first step, which says our lives have become unmanageable, that had not only to do with drinking. It's when I'm sober. I'm trying to manage my life, get all the external things taken care of. I'm looking to remedy all the things I did out of alcoholism rather than work on healing what causes my alcoholism. And I learned that when I start to focus on the external world to make my life manageable, it doesn't work. It actually becomes a liability. I'm trying to look good, sound good, be good to all the elders in AA who say, kid, you look good, you sound good, you're doing okay. And I say, I'm doing okay, I got a job, I showered, I shaved, I got clean clothes on, you're doing good, keep coming back. And my focus is on getting that approval because if I look in the mirror and I look good, then I'm good, I'm spiritual. But my internal condition is a war zone, because I have the chatter of 1,000 voices going on all the time. I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and by 5 after 6, I'm at war with someone. And I start to see the world through the mind again. And everything out there becomes a threat. I'm living in fear. They're a threat, they're a threat, that's a threat, it's a threat. Because I know what you're thinking. And I'm never okay, and I wasn't okay. And almost 6 months of the day, I needed some relief, and that was called a double vodka. I wasn't gonna get drunk just for the day. I wanna get drunk just for the day. I just wanna get out for a little while, get some ease and comfort, and I go back to AA. I didn't even value that God brought me 6 months, because the pain of living sober was too great. So step two was an out to that kind of insane thinking, which leads to insane behavior. Step two is my pointer out. And I get introduced to step two in chapter to the agnostics on page 45. Well, it's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me, to help me find the power greater than myself, which will solve my problem, solve it. See, if I went down to a grocery store or a local merchant here, or just walked down the street, and I got 10 people at random and said, hey, I have this problem, most likely I would get 10 different answers, yeah? 10 different answers to the same problem, and then I pick and choose, like some of our AA meetings. I went to an AA meeting down here one time, bless the hearts, it was a beginner's meeting. There was 50 different ways to get sober. I said, which one do you choose if you're new? But what Alcoholics Anonymous does is gives me a solution to solve my problem. One solution to solve my problem, and that's God. So this book is going to allow me to experience a God that perhaps I don't even know. And I came in somewhat agnostic. I believe there was a God out there, but you just can't prove the existence of it. It's not tangible. And some of my mind was telling me that spirituality and religion is the same thing. Now for me on my journey, pardon me, they have met. The two roads have met. But at the beginning, I had to see the difference between the two. One has religious dogma, one didn't. And that was okay for me. And my conception of God, because chapter two agnostics tells me my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. The point is, was I willing? Yeah? Was I willing to be changed? Step three, the same thing. When I did my first third step, I had no idea what I was in for. What I did was I stepped into a kiddie pool, and my sponsor was at the deep end of the pool with the big diving board, but we're in the same water. The point is, I'm willing to be changed. I'm willing to try something else. Step two is a pointer out. I'm willing to get out of this. And for me, step one is always the thing, the springboard that moves me into two, that moves me into three, and so on. Because if I'm anemic in step one, I'm not really going to do step two. I'm going to kind of make a decision in three, and four is going to stall right out, especially when I get to the fourth column. And as far as amends go, I'll make amends to the ex-girlfriend because I want to get back in bed with her, and I'm done. Have a great life. I'm going to make amends to Joe because he always loans me money. And I'm self-willed, run riot. So step one for me is always a springboard for all of this, the pointer out. God, the truth is true until we find out a new truth. And over and over and over again, that's been revealed to me. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sure like many of us, what page 27 talks about, ideas, attitudes, and emotions, which were once the guiding forces of my life. Yeah. They told me how to think, how to feel, how to do everything, all residing in this warehouse of toxic stuff called the mind. And I really believe that to be true. The reason why thoughts have so much power, because they're mine, and I believe them to be true. And I actually think, this is the absurdity of all of it, I actually think I have thoughts. Like I invent these thoughts. Failing to realize that the thoughts have me and I buy them. And they become real, and that means they're powerful. And you don't understand. If you had my problems, yeah, that's how it goes. I was watching something, this documentary on the Catholic church, and this priest was talking, and he's making opening remarks, and he said something that went like, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but your resentments, your fears, and many of those relationships that you have now, including people who pass, in 5 years, they will not be part of your life anymore. But in that moment, it feels like life and death. That's how futile all of it is. So why do I pay attention to this head? So I go through chapter to agnostic with my sponsor. And the great thing about this chapter, what a great piece of spiritual information, it allows me to have a transformation. It tells me how to find a God, to lay aside old ideas. They don't even say the ideas are right or wrong. They just lay them aside, make room for new. Where do I find this God? Deep down within. See, my thing is it's out there. When I get that in order, when I fix this, when I get that job, when I make this money, all the external stuff, but that's just a liability. They say the journey is in. The old timers would say it's an inside job. I didn't ever know what that meant until I studied the big book, that the great reality, God is deep down within me, and it's just been smothered with resentments and fears and behaviors and trauma. Ideas, attitudes, emotion, roles I think I'm supposed to play, and the lies. Lie upon lie upon lie, which means I have all these different characters I'm playing. Oh, my Lord, buried underneath there is the soul. That's why, for me, the process of recovery, as painful as it is sometimes, and in humbling as it is, a force feeding of humility, is always removal, never addition. The more that gets removed, the freer I am. But what I would do is start to accumulate things as a kid, accumulate things as an adult. This is going to make me okay. That's going to make me okay. I'll believe in this. I'll believe in that. And all it does is smother what needs to be uncovered. And that's really uncomfortable. See, in Alcoholics Anonymous, what AA's told me to do was to walk a path I never walked before. To take 12 steps into my life that I knew nothing about. And to have an experience, a personal experience with a God of my understanding that I knew less about. And the only thing that allowed me to put one foot in front of the other and chop wood and carry water was the fire, the God DNA, the fire in the soul that yearns to be one with God. That's the thing that walks me through the dark nights. That's the thing when I hit the spots where I feel like I can't touch God anymore. Can't grab God anymore. I feel like I'm losing my way. I write another inventory, I make another prayer, and I call my sponsor one more time. It's that. It's the soul leading us. And once we pass through that, we come out even lighter. Because God, for me, is continually pruning the tree to be a maximum service to Him and those about us. And why should I find God? Chapter Agnostics tells me. When I see people solving their problem upon a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, I have to stop doubting the power of God. The God I did work, mine didn't. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's 10 people, there's 20 people, there's 500 people, and in their own way, they're giving testimony to AA, and their God got them sober. And I'm hanging on to days, wondering how am I going to get out. It must be what they're talking about, this God guy. How do you get that? And the book's going to show me. Group of drunks for good orderly direction. Am I willing to let go of what I've always done to try something new? Because if I'm not willing to let go, I will start to repeat old behaviors, which are really not old because I'm still doing them, so they're current. How many times did I pick up the first drink drunk? Never. Always pick up the first drink sober. How many times do I act out away from that old behavior? I'm sober. I'm alert. I'm awake. And I go back to that which is killing me. And that's just the power of the mind. And what I need to do is get far away from this mind. In the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, there's some things I wrote down. It talks about a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism. I would have recovered long ago. I would have recovered long ago if a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life. Self-knowledge, willpower, self-help, therapies, religious organization, motivational speakers, those are all wonderful things. But how can I sustain that for the rest of my life I don't have the power. Because for me, on page 45, and I speak for myself, the most important line in my big book, lack of power is my dilemma. That sums me up. I need a committee meeting just to tie my shoes in the morning on my own. Lack of power is my dilemma. So with power, no dilemma. And all those other things, therapies, motivational speakers, I'm a good member of my church now. All those things become part of the journey, not the journey. Because I got God, I got some spirit flowing through me. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's an arrival for me. And it really comes down to, there's an old saying that goes, seeing is believing. I'm going through the steps, I'm with the sponsor, I'm going to meetings, and little by slowly, I start to see my life changing. It's getting healthier, it's getting spiritually healthier, and I cannot deny the God that's going on in me. When the ABC says, God could and would if he was sought, it starts to read like God can and has, because I continue to seek him. I can't deny the work that he's doing. Not better than anyone, not less than anyone, but there has been a change, a completely new point of view on life, a new outlook on life, because it's not seeing from the mind, it's coming from the soul. There were so many things in my past that I was always so ashamed of and afraid of coming into light. But I'm in a place of what our book talks about, not regretting the past, and it was to shut the door on it, because I'm not living my story anymore. I'm living my life. And I can be in AA for a long time and still living my story. That's what happened. That's what I did. I live my life now as God sees fit. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And for me, sanity was wholeness of mind. Truth, solution, all synonymous with God. There's something that always, that goes, know the truth and the truth will set you free. In my old high school, on the front, there's a big statue that says, the truth shall set you free. I've heard it for years. It begs the question, what is the truth? Know the truth and the truth will set you free. Then what is the truth? He, God, is the truth. Know God and I'll be free. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, to truth, the wholeness of mind, to the solution. And if my mind is not telling me to go drink and drug, then my body's not getting drink and drug in it. I'm free based on my spiritual fitness. It is that simple. I've heard some cats in AA turn the 12 steps into a trigonometry exam. Lord have mercy. A big book says God doesn't make too hard terms to those who seek him. Most good ideas are simple. Why would God want to trip up one of his own kids? We do the tripping up. We have warring theologians, big bookers against big bookers against non-big bookers. And God's going, that's not what I created. That's not what I created. I want you to get better, to go help my kids. Get on with your life. No? Was I willing, and am I still willing, to have God be everything? Am I willing to still be completely transformed once again? Am I willing to have God run my life rather than me in all areas? Everything means everything. It's one thing to have spiritual beliefs. It's another to live them. And my experience has been, if spirituality doesn't touch every single area of my life, it touches none of my life. Now, I don't do this perfect. I don't want to give anyone that impression that somehow, you know, everything is butterflies and rainbows all the time. And I will tell you, a few days ago, what's going on, I know we got some folks who aren't in the U.S. We got some ugly stuff going on in my country right now. It's deplorable what's going on across the board. Across the board, it's disgusting. And we're watching, I don't like to watch the news, but I was watching it. And I start to get heavy. And I had a big boulder on my back. And I start to experience some contempt and some judgments. And when I start to judge, it means I got agnosticism going on. And no one's doing it right. I got the script that they follow what I tell them to do. A lot of finger pointing. And I caught it. See, the thing about being spiritually awake, you start to catch it, you start to hear it. And the sight of self-will becomes repulsive. So I call my sponsor and I read some inventory to him. And he reminded me that stuff just begets more of what you're seeing. I need to bring love where there's no love, and tolerance where there is none. Because soon I start doing, it's your fault, I'm just part of the problem again. But that's how sneaky this stuff is. Yeah. So God awakens me, awakens many of us. And because I claim to be recovered, it doesn't mean I'm cured. There's that other guy, the alcoholic guy who goes dormant. He's like shadows me every so often. And he's just dying for me to rest on my laurels, just dying me to get caught up in some new stuff, dying for me to get caught up in social media nonsense, just so he can wake up and take over. There's an opening, and he bores a hole right in, and he starts doing the thinking for me, and I don't even know the mind's working anymore. I think, and it's me being a spiritual giant. Get rid of this one and push that one over there. Look how spiritual I am. And I'm an untreated alcoholic again. That's how quick that goes. And if I continue on that path, I'm an alcoholic. I drink. That's what I do. That's what the default button says. Drink. Never immune from that. Once an alkie, always an alkie. And this thing will lay around forever to get me. I'm going to have, with God's grace, in a couple of weeks, 32 years sobriety. Trust me, my alcoholism is not interested. It's not impressed, and it really doesn't care. This baffling feature of alcoholism, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Well, what other kind of behaviors do I got going on that I keep going back to? The fear sprees over and over and over again. The money sprees. Money becomes God again. I start to worship money rather than God. It's the guy, I go to a meeting and I see a fellow AA who's really in great shape. He's dieting, he's exercised, going to the gym. He just looks like a model on the cover of a magazine. He just looks great. And I say, wow, I want to get in shape like that. Joe looks great. And then Joe comes to me and asks me to sponsor him. And I find out the reason why Joe is dieting and exercising and always looking nice and shiny and glossy, because vanity has got him and driving him to do that. Well, the guy who's making lots of money and working two jobs, he said, God, he's always working. He's got so much money. He's so successful. And then you sit down with him and have a talk with him, and you find out greed has got him doing all of that. And with all of those bells and whistles, they are not free. I want to be free. Suffered long enough. And this power is going to take me out of that kind of insane thinking and that old behavior. My history going in and out of treatment resembles someone who would rather be ruined than changed. And then it got so bad, I don't care what the change is going to look like. It has to be better than what I've done with my life. And that's just clarity. We're given, if you will, a new mind by a reworking of the soul. Scripture talks about that. Old man, new man. When the soul gets awakened, we're given a new mind. I can't self-help this. The very same mind that tells me it's going to fill the hole is the very same mind that keeps digging a hole. And yet I return to it. I'll figure it out. I know what I need to do. I'll work on it. I'll work on my defects. I'll work on my prayer life. And the best thing I can do is surrender. A total surrender. And it usually comes out of control and managing, being involuntarily shattered rather than willfully relinquished. It's just forged out on a pain of anvil of pain where I cannot do this anymore, sober or coming in here drunk. And here comes a little spirit of humility, and here comes where alcohol says it beats us into a state of reasonableness, where I sit with someone like my friend Richie out there and I say, Richie, you gotta help me. And he's, okay, I got some information for you. Let's go to work. A day prior, I'm going to do it on my own. I'm not going to go to Rich. On that moment, it's wide open, and now I can take direction. And that's just the soul working. Over in step 10, what it tells us, as we're looking to get to this place called sanity, in step 10 in the big book, after going through all this work, it says sanity has returned. wholeness of mind is back. The problem, it says, has been removed. The thing that only has been removed. Which means this thing that took me over, God steps in and cuts it away. Not cured, but gets removed. Where I'm no longer even thinking about a drink. Now, I haven't thought about a drink or any kind of narcotics in a really, really long time. Thank you, God, for that. But I know full. I know the drink and the other stuff is thinking about me every single day. And it'll come in through a busted relationship. It'll come in through some money. It'll come in through a lack of money. Whatever it is, it'll get in there and start to pull away and erode all the spiritual muscles to the point where I'm really anemic again. And here comes a drink to deal with life on life's terms. I was living life on God's terms. Now I'm living life on life's terms, which means I'm living life on Peter Marinelli's terms. And I need more of everything and control everything. And I'm not good. I'm traveling really, really heavy. I have found when I'm on this path, my sponsor always asks me, where does it hurt? What hurts? Is it an altered? Is it a current? What hurts? And part of spirituality is not being glossy and squeaky clean. Part of spirituality is I can sit with someone saying, I'm hurting today. I'm afraid today. Because the ego's taking a back step. I can be more vulnerable. I can be more transparent when this God is working. Where does it hurt? And so I take a look at step two. One of the things my sponsors had me do was to write down my old conception of God, the God I grew up with. If you thought it, you did it, and they're starting the barbecue in hell for you. God's going to punish you. God's going to punish you. Now, I never had a problem with the carpenter, but this czar of the heavens, this spirit, this big God out there, I could never really sink my teeth into that. So when I came into AA with the sponsors, write down your old conception of God. What does that look like? And he says, write down your current conception of God. What does that look like? Because he wanted to know what my God was like. Who am I praying to? What does it sound like? And then he asked me, write down where you believe God is working in your life. These are all little spiritual homework assignments. And write down where you have doubt or skepticism that God's not working in your life. Well, money, relationships, maybe health, where I live. What was I afraid to turn over to God and why? Well, if I turn money over, I may never be rich and I want to be rich. If I turn the sex life over to me, God might say celibacy till further notice. Maybe we don't want that. Whatever it might be. So I have control over that because I have agnosticism over that, which I have self-reliance over that, which means that part of my life is completely unmanageable and I ain't letting go until I bottom out. So he wanted to talk to me about that. And I got to see where I was in charge, or at least I believed I was in charge in many areas of my life while I'm sober, going to AA meetings. I'm bleeding out with agnosticism. And for me, when I'm suffering from agnosticism, that's current untreated alcoholism. And that begets more untreated alcoholism. How free do I want to be? Because I'm still alcoholic, and somewhere, someplace, there's a drink that says Peter Marinelli. And the only thing I have is a spiritual airbag called GOD to keep me from going there. Rarely have we seen a person fail thoroughly follow our path, how it works, says. I've been to so many meetings and somebody yells out, I don't know how it works, but it works. I want to scream out. Page 58 says, how it works. Keep reading. You know. Rarely have we seen a person fail. Fail at what? Sobriety, God, consciousness, who's thoroughly followed this path. The path of what? Decision 3, 4 through 9. We will get awakened. This power will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. We will be forever changed. But I had to be convinced that my life on self-will could hardly be a success. Back to step one again. I'm an alcoholic, drunk or sober. I cannot manage my own life, and no human power can relieve me of alcoholism. And I've tried the human power, you know, in and out of treatment, hard. Was going to relieve me of my alcoholism. I tried the money. That would relieve me of my alcoholism. It just made it worse. And that's when one of my sponsors told me, your home group can't keep you sober. Meetings won't keep you sober. Meetings are not going to treat alcoholism because it's a bunch of human powers put together. It works at the beginning, but we need to go the marathon. We're not in a 100-yard dash. At some point, there has to be a shift into a God personal to me, because the meeting ends at 9 o'clock perhaps, and you go home alone. When you get into bed, you might, even if you're married, you put your head on the pillow alone. When you're walking around, you are alone, left with the head or with the soul. What am I going to do? What am I going to do in those certain trials and low spots ahead? Who am I going to rely upon? And I can easily treat people like God and God like people and forget. Making a decision for me, you know, the first time I did a third step with my sponsor, I'll confess, my first sponsor is from Brooklyn, New York. I'm an old Brooklyn, New York boy. you know, the running joke back there was we thought the movie The Godfather was an educational movie growing up. But, you know, there's some rough characters. And my sponsor, bless his heart, my first sponsor was just wonderful man. And it came time for the third step. And he was kind of a rough and tumble guy, very spiritual man. But, you know, he used some street language when he would speak, and he would kind of be intimidating. And, well, we held hands. We got on our knees. And I'm on my knees holding another man's hands, and the room was dimly lit. And he closed his eyes and began the third step prayer. I closed one eye, kept the other open just in case. That's where I was at. You never know. But we did a third step prayer, and I didn't know what I was in for. I was still in the kiddie pool. And for some of us, the feeling is profound and electric after third step prayer. But for many of us, and I'm one of them, I did this thing called a third step prayer, and I was turning my will of life, my thinking, and my actions over to God. But all I can see at that moment was I'm turning all the pain over. Which basically meant alcohol, drinking. I didn't understand how far that was going to go. That those defects of character, those behaviors, those roots go really, really deep. Not curable by the hands of another human. Only curable or remedied with the touch of the master's hand. But I didn't know that. The key was, as I've learned, because you live life forward and understand it backwards, my willingness by doing a third step to be changed into something I don't know yet, which is really an example of God's great courage to put it in me to say, we're about to go on, embark on this path where my life is not going to be any of my business. I have no say so anymore. The ego don't want to hear that. The pride don't even want to look at that one. But I look back on my life, and so many times when God would take over, it always wound up better. I'm a business owner, which is just one of those AA miracles, because I was in an abandoned building. No one would come near me. And I'm a business owner. And we had the honeymoon phase, and then it got really difficult. In fact, there was a time I thought my business was going to lock its doors. It was really difficult. And if anyone's a business owner, you know, at the beginning, all the money goes back into the company. You take just enough to cover your personal overhead, and it's difficult. And it got worse than that, and we were drawing no money. I was on basically no salary, and I'm saying, oh, my God, my business is going to close. And I'm trying to figure out ways to manage and control the outcome. And sleepless nights and coming up with game plans, which is fine, but I was in charge. And I wrote some inventory, and I share with my sponsor, and what gets revealed to me, what the third step talks about, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. When I'm playing God, I'm totally selfish. The arrogance in me that God has given me this wonderful, fruitful life, and I say, get out of the way, I'm taking over. The arrogance in that. I didn't even realize it because it's subtle. Alcohol is a subtle foe. And after the inventory, I realized, oh my God, I'm playing God. And what I began to do, not to save my business, but just to get me back into that light, was surrender everything. And what began to happen, as much as I love my business, I found myself realizing I'm not my business. I've always got a job. I'm not my business. I'm not even the money. I have nothing to do with this. God put me there to do some work. It's his job to run it as he sees fit. And the day says, when he says close the doors, he closes the doors. And he will keep me safe and protected and move me to another place. And I was met with a tremendous amount of liberation, latitude, and freedom. Well, all that planning got crystal clear. Most of it was do nothing. Every once in a while, God would give me an inspirational thought or a decision, what our book talks about. Well, my business is wonderful today. I still don't have a lot of money. What I do for a living, I'm not out there to make money. I'm just trying to make a living. I'm trying to help people. But the business is just, it's just incredible what's going on. And Marion, my better half, and I are watching this happen and going, well, what I did one day, I looked to have my prayer place right here. I'm looking at the carpenter and I'm going, you're unbelievable. You are really unbelievable what you do. I doubted you, I had skepticism, and again, you just blow me away. Incredible what you do with my life. I see you're a show off, and I love it. But that's what God does. He loves to show off his great works, but I need to get out of the way. So I make a decision in three, realizing that I'm about to play by someone else's rules, God's rules, not mine. Now I'm I can become a spiritual being, enlightened being. I'm always a human being, which means I'm subject to failure and breaking down because I'm broken now, I'm flawed. And every once in a while, that other guy, that mind is gonna show up, self is gonna show up. But I have a big God, I have a great sponsor, I have a great AA, I have a great big book, and I have inventory to get me back in the saddle, all of those things. But the third decision is just a decision. It's wonderful. It's a show of willingness to be changed, but it means nothing unless accompanied by 4 through 9. And I'm running out of time, but one of the neat assignments my sponsors had me do is I took the third step prayer. The third step is actually on page 62 and 63. He's the employer. I work for God. He's the father. I'm the child. He's the principal, I'm the agent, we get to represent God. Those are the third step considerations. And my third step prayer was an affirmation of willing to live along those lines. What my sponsor had me do is look at the third step prayer with each line and break it down in my language. What is that saying to me? God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. That's different language than I'm used to hearing. So what does that mean to me? And the reason why he would do that, so when I hear it as I'm writing out my language, it becomes my prayer, it becomes personal. And so we sit down, God, I offer myself to thee. And you do with me as you want. You take me like the wretch I am, do anything you want. I'm willing to be changed and to be living proof, to be bear witness of your power, love, and way of life. Let me stand by the door, Sam Shoemaker said, and be living proof of your great power in this great place, the sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous, how it took a wretch like me and gave me some integrity, some dignity, and freedom from alcohol. Our book talks about permanent sobriety. We live a day at a time. How is this possible? We get to bear witness to that. And we get to share it and shout it from the rooftops in Alcoholics Anonymous and not hide God in a closet somewhere, but shout it from the rooftops because at the end of the day, this is the way out. The 12 steps take us right there, and people like us who are in bondage get free forever, a day at a time. That's the good news. That's the good news that the war is over. I don't have to suffer at the hands of alcoholism, drunk or sober. We get to be free in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I got. Peace.